You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are back, and we have a really special episode this week. We really do. We say we have special episodes every week, but this one's really special to me because it is the 30th anniversary of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and we have a great crew to talk all about it. As an animation freak and artist, and also part of my major was the history of animation. I love seeing in Roger Rabbit how much, you know, historical and how much story they kept in. And it was just amazing to see all these different characters combined into one film. Seeing Mickey and, you know, Bugs on the screen together was just like flooring. It was just great. And seeing two people on the screen together like that is Mike and I. And, you know, that's just amazing in itself. And of course, the man, the myth, and the legend, the man I just mentioned, my co-pilot for this, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How was that for a build-up?
We really are the Mickey and Bugs of the podcasting world.
Oh, yeah, but who's
every week when people like listen to our show, they are experiencing something of that significance.
Oh, I've been saying that for years. But
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Course. Yes.
The meetings of the minds.
That is not overhyped in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, not at all.
Not at all. Nope.
And it's pretty interesting because, you know, when we together, you know, galaxies live, galaxies die. You know, it's that type of thing. It's pretty awesome.
Absolutely. It's a crisis every time.
Oh, wait. Oh, you have no idea. When we're using Skype, most definitely. So how are you, my friend?
I'm good. A little, like, you know, still got that AfterCon glow, so which means I'm tired. This is great. You know, I mean, where I'm here, you know, I had to switch it up because I was prepared to talk all about science. But, yeah. You know, with this, you know, science sometimes happens. Science sometimes doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not even talking about, you know, fake science and stuff like that. It just didn't happen this time, folks. The science portion of the show will return. I think we have it down for December now. So yes. If you want to hear Dr. Scott
back
and Lucas,
to the lab,
they got to be in the lab. They're working on something big.
They're working on something big.
Exactly. Something that, you know, Dr. Scott was like, I'll tell you about it later. It's like, uh-oh. And he just had an evil grin on his face. So yeah, they'll be back. It's because, you know, we got a great show, though. Roger Rabbit is always amazing to talk about.
Absolutely. Is Jessica. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
Yes, I know. She's not bad. She's just drawn that way.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. But it's a lot of fun. And we're going to have a great crew to talk all about it. We got a great victim this week in the geek seat. But, Mike, what do we have to talk about first?
Well, for our Rant and Rain segment, we're going to skip ahead a little bit. You know, we were both at the Atlanta Comic Convention, the Atlanta Comic Con this past weekend, and we did three panels. We did two on podcasting. We did one podcasting panel on Saturday, and we did a Doctor Who panel on Sunday, as well as a podcasting panel. That's the way we finished up the show, and we didn't know what to expect at all. And this is, we'll get much more into the details of our overall thoughts of the Atlanta Comic Con later in the con report. But I wanted to sort of talk about this incident that happened at the tail end of our experience at the Atlanta Comic Con that just kind of blew me away. We had finished up talking about podcasting 101, basically introducing people to the ideas of podcast, what is expected of how you can podcast, how easy it is to do, how accessible it is to do, how just anybody can do it. I mean, we are prime examples of that. You know, that sort of thing, and answering any questions that anybody had about podcasting to the best of our ability, and offering certainly support as people go forward with their ideas of podcasting. So, and then so we ended the show. We thought, okay, we're done. This is the end of our experience. And then at the end of the show, at the end of our panel, a young girl, probably, I would say young teen, not young, maybe a later teenager. Is that right?
I'd probably say 16, 17.
Yeah. I'm not going to name her name or give any more specifics because it's not really important. And I don't want to embarrass her. God knows I don't want to embarrass her, but I do want her to know how special this moment was for us. That she came by and she really thanked us for giving the panel that we did and talking to her about podcasting and explaining some things because she had gotten some misinformation and she just started crying because for the first time she had been confronted with the fact that podcasting is not that difficult to do. It's pretty accessible. It's pretty easy. And I think she'd been on the impression, probably because of some contentious people, that she couldn't do podcasting, that it was too expensive, too hard, too this, too that, too much of a wall in front of her. And we kind of experienced this with a little bit with a couple people on the first, on Saturday as well. It wasn't to this degree. But I mean, this girl was literally in tears thanking us because we had broken down a wall for her. We had shown her a road that she had not known existed. And obviously it really, like, it just took me by surprise. And I started almost like crying too. I was just like, this is amazing. But the fact that what really kind of made me more even emotional about it afterwards and even really very angry is that the fact that she probably didn't, you know, she didn't get these notions because she just thought them up in her head. You know, she got these notions because some idiot, and I'm using a really kind word here by calling them an idiot, some jackhole, like, must have told her, you can't do this. You can't do this because of this. No, you can't do this, not knowing what they were talking about at all. It wasn't constructive criticism. It was, get this, you know, you won't be able to do this. Why even bother trying? Because it's going to be too hard and you can't do this.
Well, exactly. And basically the person was discouraging her from doing it. They're trying to talk her out of doing it. Oh, it's going to be too expensive. You're going to have a soundboard. You're going to have to know all these technical things. You're going to have to be able to put a very expensive lavalier microphones up.
You're going to have to spend $800.
At least. And folks, neither Mike nor myself have spent $800 to do this podcast. You know, well, over the years, possibly, but
over the 8 years, maybe.
Yeah, but not for equipment by any means. And, you know, we have decent equipment for the show. You know, we try to pride ourselves on the audio and the sound and such.
We are decently equipped, yeah.
What this person was doing to this kid really pissed both Mike and I off. And for her to come up and her to say thank you and break down in tears, we've never had that happen at a show. Not purposely, you know, at least, you know.
Yeah. You know. Usually they're crying to get out. They're
exactly.
Like, we lock the door. We do, like, when the panel starts, we do wait about 5 minutes and we lock the door so they can't get out. Mm-hmm. And yes, there is some tears and some screaming usually involved. But not like this. You're right. We were not prepared for this kind of emotional outburst. And look, like I said, I'm not demeaning what she was going through at all. I mean, because it really touched me, and that's why I want to bring it up. And I, like I said, if she's listening, I'm not trying to embarrass anybody, but I just wanted her to know, first of all, how proud I am of her coming to our panel, because obviously she'd been dissuaded not to. And we don't know by who this is. Her mother seemed like a very nice woman and very supportive, so I don't think it was coming from there. And we don't know exactly who this force, you know, of contention was. So, but I've run across it before too. I mean, whether it's meeting people who are trying to write stories or draw comics or, you know, do this and that, or whatever creative endeavor they want to do, there seems to be somebody in their family and their friends or in their circle that are just, you know, jackholes and trying to be a jerk about it and trying to be a bully about it and trying to crush people's dreams for no apparent reason other than just the fact that they can. And that makes me very angry. That makes me very upset. In this day and age of anti-bullying, to me, crushing someone's spirit is like the worst thing you can do. It's just about, because it's not about them at all. It's just a power play on you to make your, you know, bad self feel all good inside. And I don't know how people like that sleep at night, to be honest with you.
No, I don't either. It's bullying. It truly is. And it's like,
I'm bringing the thunder. Can you hear it?
Oh, I can hear it a little bit. Yeah, Mike is angry. The tiki gods are upset about this.
You're upsetting the tiki gods.
Boom. But no, seriously, it's a form of bullying. And we spent the time in that panel saying, you know, purposely, you know, talk to other podcasters, talk to, you know, other people who are in the industry. They'll be glad to give you advice. They'll be glad to. And then for her to come to us after saying this advice that she had gotten and the discouragement by it, it just broke my heart to hear that.
Yeah.
And, you know, because, you know, both Mike and I, you know, we're advocates for helping people out there and to make them better themselves and to do more for the shows that they want and to get their voice out there and to do the passion. And it's just awesome. And I just love talking about it, and I love seeing the reactions, and I love the questions we got from these people. And then after the panels, we always invite
some damn good ideas for some podcasts. I was like, ooh, that sounds really good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. There are some amazing ones out there, and we promise we're not going to steal them.
But they may be on the network. Wink,
wink, nudge, nudge. And we actually have already heard from at least one person who we met over the weekend.
Very nice.
Yes. So it's actually pretty cool. And basically, you know, when we were talking to people after when we said the panel, you know, if you have any questions, if you want to just talk to us after the panel's over, the one great thing with this convention was they spaced it like a half hour in the room between panels.
Yeah, so you didn't have to rush out of there.
Exactly. You didn't have to close up shop and rush out. So we were actually able to talk to some of the people up close and personal after the panels. And that's when this young woman came up and talked to us.
Yeah, and so nervous. And man, that was amazing. I also want to point out, too, that, you know, like I said, we do these panels not just to promote ourselves as, you know, ESO Network and we're awesome and please listen to our shows. I mean, obviously we want to get the name out there, right? And we really appreciate anybody who helps spread that word. I mean, there were at least three times during the convention where I was in a situation where somebody didn't know that I was a part of the ESO podcast or the ESO Network, and I heard people talking about us like, oh, I've heard of you, even though they didn't even really know what our show was. They had heard of us, which is, to me, mind-boggling. So thank you for everybody who's helped spreading the word about us. But so we do, obviously, we're there to help promote ourselves, but we're also there because we generally want to help people. We want to do these introduction to podcasts because we believe in the medium. We believe in this way of expressing yourself that's new and fresh and unrestricted at this point, right? We want to encourage people. I'm very excited by listening to people's ideas on what they want to do as a podcast or introducing people to the medium that don't know about it so they can find podcasts that they think are really awesome to listen to. It's just a great way to help promote the whole genre, the whole actually medium of podcasting as opposed to, you know, just ourselves. So when that happens, when we hear from people and when we, you know, sort of connect with people, it's really special. And you know, it's something that we hope for, but we don't know automatically that it's going to happen.
Exactly. And you never know what's going to turn out. You never know who you're going to meet. You never know who you're going to talk to. And, you know, it was just a great time. And to be able to help somebody who had been down and trodden and actually thinking about giving up on it.
Yeah, I would say, you know, if anybody who's listening who is in that place, whether it's podcasting related or not, something that creative that you're trying to do, and you've got someone in your face that's telling you you can't do that, that's stupid. Why do you want to waste your time doing that? You'll never be able to do that. You can't do that. That's made by, you know, talented people or this person or that person. You have to have money to do that. Don't, please, don't listen to them. You know, feel free. And there's a lot of trolls out there. There's a lot of negativity out there. I get that. It's kind of hard to avoid it. You know, I mean, especially when you put your something out there that's your heart and your soul, and you put something out there that you've worked on, and people just, you know, want to crap on it. I mean, that is really difficult to take. I mean, Mike and I have gotten criticism on our shows, certainly on our other projects that we've done. It's not fun. It's really not fun to get to hear people do that. But, you know, we have to believe in the project that we're working on ourselves. Nobody is going to believe in your project more than you. So you have to get used to that fact, and then just work it out and work through it. It is something that you have to deal with. And if there's anything that we can do, either as podcasters or as people, you know, please feel free to reach out to us. I mean, that's why we give out our information. It's not just to, you know, to get, well, you know, if you want to support us by sending money, that's awesome too. Don't we have a Patreon, Mike?
Oh, we do, actually. Yeah, we have a great Patreon.
We do. So, and I'm sure Mike's going to tell you a little bit more about that a little in a minute, but, you know, we want to help support you in addition to, you know, helping getting supported ourselves. I mean, we're all in this together, right? And things might be kind of gloomy, especially in today's climate. So anything that can bring out the light in people, anything that can bring out positivity, Mike and I feel the same way. We want to help support that. We want to help support the light. We want to help support the fun. We want to help support the raves, right? We don't want to rant. We want to rave. We want to support the awesome stuff that's out there. And anything that we can help to do that, we are all about. So that's why when we say join our Facebook group, promote yourself on our Facebook group, participate in our Facebook group, contact us. We will be more than happy to help promote your stuff. You know, we have a lot of independent writers and creators, comic people. We've got one actually coming up on the Geek Seat a little bit later. So we want to do everything we can to help support and promote people like that.
Exactly. And that's the best way we can do. And, you know, hopefully, you know, I don't ever expect anything back in return for it. We just like doing it at all. You know, we do it because we like doing it. And, you know, we feel like we're better for it.
Well, I don't even think I'm, you know, you're right. I mean, I think I can't see me not doing it. You know, it's not a question of, you know, it's a question of why I don't want to help one of, you know, I love seeing my friends who are struggling to when they reach success. I love that. I don't like seeing them suffer. I don't like seeing them struggle, but I love seeing them have successes. I ran across at this convention, I ran across a few indie creators that I know. And while I was talking to them, someone came up and discovered their book for the first time and their eyes lit up and they connected with it and they bought the book and they were excited. And I thought that's great. This is why we do this. This is why we do this, to connect with people and to bring out the positive stuff and to share our experiences with one another. So I'm very proud to be a podcaster, very proud to be a publisher, very proud to be a writer and a creator. And I'm very proud to see others do that too. So, and when someone tries to dump on that, that pisses me off.
It does. And why would somebody want to take... Do they feel so bad about themselves that they have to make others around them feel bad and to bring other people down? That I just never understood. We had that when I was in high school or junior high. And, you know, I thought people outgrew that, but they don't. And that's the sad thing about it. And, you know, if we could do anything to help bring people up, to help promote people, to help just talk about projects or to, you know, help people who are less fortunate, that's what I want to do. But, you know, we're not that fortunate ourselves. That's why we have our Patreon. And that's why.
Here it comes, people.
Here it comes, folks. That's right. So, you know, we want to, you know, talk about the Patreon for a second. Of course, we want to thank everybody out there who has already donated to the Patreon for the ESO Network. We have three different levels currently. We have the dollar level, we have the $5 level, and we have the $10 level. You know, $10 a month, that's what, two visits to Starbucks that you would, you know, or not even, you know, coffee's just keeps on going up.
People in their coffee, man. Some people need to exist on that stuff. They'll find a way, but man, I've learned not to come between someone and their coffee.
Oh, trust me. You've tried getting between me once. I think I once tried to rip your arm off when you did that. Literally, don't get between people and their coffee, but you know, you could also, you know, think of it as caffeinating the network. That's it. You know, bringing life to ESO, and the ESO Network appreciates everyone who has donated so far. And you know, you do get some pretty cool stuff. You know, for $1 a month, you're going to be getting a newsletter starting in the fall. We're going to have a monthly newsletter talking all about what's going on with the ESO Network. Then of course, in, you know, for the $5 level, you get exclusive shows not heard anywhere else but on Patreon. And they're not just Earth Station One or Earth Station Who. They are also all other shows from the network. You know, there's stuff by the Cast Request. There's stuff by DCU. There's stuff by Monster, you know, the Sci-Fi Monster podcast. There's also stuff from Myopia. There's stuff by Cast Request. You know, it's just pretty darn awesome that everyone is putting their time out and doing stuff like that. And you know, I do appreciate it, and the podcasts out there who are helping us out with it. And then also I'm helpful to, you know, the people who are subscribing to it. And for the $10 members, starting, you know, you get all the newsletters and all the podcasts, but you are going to get an exclusive podcast not heard anywhere else. It's gonna be a brand new show called ESO Network After Dark. And it is going to be a real interesting show. We've already started talking about ideas for it, and that's going to be coming to you starting in October. So ESO After Dark is going to be a unique experience with podcasters from across the ESO network. It's going to be people joining up who you never thought hearing together on the same shows, or you might only hear once a year at Dragon Con or something like that. You're going to be hearing them monthly coming together, talking about stuff. It should be, you know, pretty cool, and you might not know what you're going to get. So,
well, I know two things people are going to get, and if I might be so bold for at least at the $5 level and above, they are going to get two very cool exclusives. We talked about the Atlanta Comic Con, and we're going to get, like I said, more details on that, our experience in the con report. But we did record our Doctor Who panel that we did for Earth Station Who, technically under the Earth Station Who banner, and that will be released to our patrons.
That's probably going to be live by the time this episode goes out.
And starting this week, we are releasing one panel that we did last year at Dragon Con a week until we get to the big Dragon Con event. So, over the next course of whatever that is, 5-6 weeks, I don't know, I can't do math, but we will have a panel that either Mike or I participated in, or someone on the network participated in, and that'll be available for our exclusive patrons as well. So we just are very excited leading up to Dragon Con. So if you want to hear some past panels, getting ready for the new, you know, experience that we're all going to have at Dragon Con, tune in, become a patron, and you can listen to those.
That is awesome. Yep, there's definitely some great stuff. And while we're thinking of it, let's thank a couple of our patrons right now. Of course, let us thank Mike Seals, good friend of the show. He has donated to the ESO Network Patreon. And let us also thank Jacob Heller. Thank you, both of you guys. Appreciate it so, so much for you guys, you know, donating monthly, taking the time to do it. And I hope you're enjoying the content that's out there. We do really appreciate it, as we like to say here up on Earth Station One. So, you know, you can definitely find the Patreon. All you have to do is go to esonetwork.com, right at the top navigation. It says ESO Network Patreon. Doesn't get much easier than that. You find a whole world of fun stuff right up there. You also have the Amazon link. I know we just recently had, Prime Day for Amazon. And we helped promote some of that up on through our Facebook group, and hopefully you guys got some pretty cool deals up there. So it's pretty neat. And of course we have the Tee Public store, and we have some new designs probably coming out within the next few weeks. So check out Tee Public and show your ESO love. You have all the different shows, have their logos up there or neat designs up there. It's pretty cool stuff that you could find. You never know. You might actually see somebody with your face on your shirt. You never know. You might go, hey, wait a minute. You're on my chest. It's like, I am? Oh, yeah, you're on my T-shirt. That's pretty awesome. You know, what was it? The weirdest thing in the world was...
Sorry, I just thought it was something completely different when you said that.
I know you were thinking Jessica Rabbit. I know. But, you know, we're not even going there yet, sir. So let's take a quick break, and we will be back in a moment when we are going to be looking at the Geek Seat. What fine? Where the hell did I die? Must have been a dream. I don't believe where I've been. Come on, let's do it again. You feel like I'm magic.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. I'm actually getting pretty pumped about the upcoming Mission Impossible sequel. Been hearing some great buzz about this movie on social media from critics. Unfortunately, we do not get that particular movie this week. We have to wait a whole nother week for it to come out in theaters. But we do have a couple movies coming out in theaters this weekend. Two sequels, actually. The first is Equalizer 2, starring Denzel Washington, who is returning as a retired CIA Black Ops specialist. And then we also have Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, which is going to be a flashback-heavy follow-up to the musical, which features music from ABBA. Now, I actually haven't seen the original movies in either of these two series, so I don't know that I'm in a rush to check out these two in the theaters. But if you happen to enjoy either of the two original movies, you might be curious to know that it's in theaters this weekend. And we don't have a whole lot on DVD, but we do have the movie Rampage, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and is actually an adaptation of the video game about giant creatures who, well, start to rampage and destroy a bunch of stuff. Again, the trailers for this one didn't necessarily grab me when I saw them earlier this year, but if you're looking for something light and fun to watch, beat the summer heat, and grab a big bucket of popcorn, this might do the trick. Well, that's it for this week. Be sure to tune in next week for more chat about movies. And in the meantime, if you're looking for more entertainment-related content, you can check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
I see the potential for basically like another Netflix kind of paradigm shift where here comes this other major player. They have a ton of resources. Apple could change the way that entertainment is consumed.
They say it's the only time this year that you'll have stars from each brand battling each other. And we know it's not going to be the case, but they like to say that, and more power to them, I guess.
Well, it's a big first step, bringing all those superheroes together. There were definitely some parts of the movie that I really enjoyed. And then there were some parts that I thought just kind of fell short of expectation.
Part of it has to be something to do with how it's being promoted. And this is a thing where audiences do not agree with critics.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse, every week on the Podcast Radio Network and Apple Podcasts.
And check out the show today on the ESO Network.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the Geek Seat segment. And our victim this week, I mean, guest this week, is our new friend, KJ Eldridge. Welcome to the show.
Hey. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for joining us. Howdy. Actually, you know, new friend to the station. But yes, we've known you for a little while, and I'm glad to finally get you on finally. For those people who may not be familiar with it, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, like you said, my name's KJ Eldridge. I'm a comic book artist, writer of novels and stuff. Most recently, or what I do the most probably is a book called Wolverine. It's a werewolf story set in the Old West. The artist on that, written by Chris Gaynor, one of my best friends. And I also wrote a novel called Last Night's Rays of Ruin. It's book one of a much larger fantasy epic. So if you see me at a bunch of Atlanta conventions and around the Southeast, you probably see me try to sell something to you like that. So those are my two main books. Of course, I got other stuff in the ready to go too, but that's.
So. Absolutely. What do you remember what was your first one? What was your first, what book or comic or what did you do? What did you do first?
The first I did was a Wolverine issue zero. It was just me and Chris trying to figure out how to do it, like how to even make a comic book. So that was in 2011, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah. And that one we've pretty much hidden from public view. So if you have a copy of it, you're one of the lucky ones. I have a stack in the garage that it'll never see the light of day.
Wow. Yeah, it's tough. I know, looking at that early work sometimes can be a little bit rough, but at least you know it shows that, you know, there's been growth, right?
Oh, definitely. If you see the difference between issue one to issue five and then the new stuff that I'm working on now, it's like night and day. The fundamentals and everything are still there, but just the process and how I do things it's totally different. It's evolved quite a bit. So,
well, definitely tell us a little bit about this baby of yours, this dream project. Because obviously, you know, as we've mentioned many times before, we're not in it for the money, right? So we're in it for the passion. What brings your passion out about this project?
I think it's just it's the creation and everything, and working on it with a group, being me and Chris is always awesome. But the characters and the story, like it really gets me going every time I work on it. So like even if I'm having like a bad day or I'm not feeling inspired, I get motivated by the story itself, and it feels like a story that I have to be involved in. I have to tell. So that's where the passion comes from. It's like if I don't do it, then I'll be kicking myself forever pretty much, and I'm too far in now to stop, so so it's, yeah, you're right, it's not a money thing, because I certainly have not made a ton of money on this, but it's been amazing. Like I wouldn't trade any of it for anything, really, career-wise, creatively and stuff, so I'm in it for the long haul. And then also, as a lot of creators know, they're inspired by the story they're working on, but you're always inspired by the next story too. So what are these characters I've created or I've helped create? What are they going to do next? What's the next adventure? What's the new problem? That kind of, just something new comes along all the time. So, yeah. So that's pretty much what gets me going.
What, artistically and even story-wise, who are some of your influences?
I'm definitely, artistically, like a lot of people, I definitely was inspired by the Image guys of the early 90s. Like,
okay, yeah, sure.
And you can, if you look at some of my artwork, you can see it. It's, there's McFarlane in there, there's Jim Lee, there's Rob Liefeld, it's all there. Plus, recently, I've really gotten into guys like Michael Lark, Chris Somney, that kind of stuff, and a lot of anime and manga influences. So it's a big giant mix of all these things that I'm like I want to emulate certain parts of everything. Plus, a lot of the guys that I've met and, the guys and the ladies I've met throughout the last doing this since 2011, 2010, whenever I actually started, I don't know, it seems like a long time ago now. But people I know personally, like seeing their work and seeing how they do things, it's like guys like Cameron Jeffrey, Wally McNair, just Nate Perry, like a lot of underground guys that a lot of people haven't heard of probably, but like I see what they do and it's amazing to me. So I'm like, how did they do that? Now I'm going to incorporate, some may call it thievery or stealing, but I think everyone in the art world takes an inspiration from something. So it's like that particular shot, they used a perspective or an angle that you know, I wouldn't necessarily even have come up with. And I'm like, okay, how can I push my art forward? So that, like, all those guys have a little hand, or all those, they have a little hand in how I draw and how I create. So, and that's just from a art side of things. Writing, it's all kinds of stuff too. So
would you say that there's a particular, I mean, not to pigeonhole you by any means, but is there some, you know, some sort of genre or style of storytelling that you really appreciate, that you're, that you would put yourself in maybe that category? I mean, Wolverine looks like, I don't know how to describe it. Is it, because there is a mix, right? I mean, there's some, some fantasy, there's some horror, you know, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a, I mean, it's a book about werewolves in the Old West. So you're mixing two pretty strong genres that have a certain flavor that people expect. So if my art has definitely gravitated towards horror and things like that, and fantasy and more organic things, and mechanic, like in my depiction of mechanical things seems to head towards the 19th century and all that kind of stuff versus in the future. But like I said, I try to push myself. So I'm working on things that are maybe a little more advanced technically than stuff you would find in the Old West. So, but yeah, if I've heard some people, and this is in a very it's not equal, of course, but like McFarlane, the way he draws his monsters, Joe Mad's werewolves that he had in Battle Chasers and stuff. I've heard like that some of my stuff kind of it looks like I've definitely taken some influence from them. So, which, you know, great artists. So.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So, if, and mood and everything. If you look at some of like American Vampire for more recent stuff, Sin City with the use of really like the colors that Frank Miller used, the just the small little pieces here and there, that sort of thing. As you can find little bits and pieces of that to create the art of Wolverine, I guess, but. Like I said, it's evolving all the time. So,
now, Wolverine is it a limited series? Do you have an end in sight, or is it something that's just continually ongoing with chapter after chapter after chapter?
It's me and Chris have mapped it out to about 30 to 35 issues for the current story that follows the lead character Bart, and it's so. His story will end at about 30, 35 issues. Hopefully we get there.
That's ambitious, man.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, but I mean, the story is going to dictate what you do with
it. Oh yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like the character demands what, you know, what they're going to do. So, his story, I mean, 35 issues away isn't really a spoiler, but you know, his story may end there, but there's more story to be told. And because of the nature of that book, plus the last night's novel series that I'm doing, everything that I do, at least independently, is connected, at least indirectly. So the story not only continues, it branches out into all these other things. So, and much like, I guess, Stephen King's Dark Tower universe, which also a huge influence on how I look at things storytelling wise.
Well, very cool. Well, yeah. We're going to find out now about some of your other influences and good or bad geek moments. So Mike, I do believe he's warmed up and ready to roll.
Are you sure? He seems a little chipper tonight. I don't know.
Well, you know, they're always chipper until the sweat starts falling.
I've heard this is tough. I think I know it's coming. So.
Oh yeah.
He thinks right. He knows.
He knows, you know, he's heard other people screaming on the show. You know, we've even had a couple people whimper and cry, but you know,
can still, if you're very quiet, you can still hear them screaming.
I cried a few minutes ago before you guys called me. So
that's only because you stepped on your kid's Lego. It's okay.
Well, you know,
there is no pain greater than that. Now, trust me. I know
that is brutal.
That is a dad joke.
Yeah, I've done it already quite a few times today.
All right, KJ, you ready?
I'm ready. Let's see what you got.
KJ, What was your favorite geek out moment?
Well, it was probably my, I think maybe my third convention as an artist and fourth convention ever. So I wasn't a huge con goer before. My table was about three tables away from Daryl Banks. And he's the guy, the artist that created, that helped create Kyle Rayner, who's one of my favorite characters, especially at that time. And so I drew a picture of Kyle Rayner, and I brought it up to him and asked him if he would sign it. And he said he noticed that I put his ring on the wrong hand. So so he kind of corrected me on that. And then he kind of confided in me, said he'd done that quite a few times over the years. So I was like, okay, that's cool. That's cool. But then he told me that he hadn't been to any conventions in years. This was like his first one in a while. And he was asking me for advice on what conventions he should start going to. And that was kind of a geek out. This is like one of my heroes asking me for advice on something I know nothing about. So it's like, it was a geek out moment, and it kind of floored me. And then also it was like, it kind of humanized, someone who was like a hero, and it made me think that, okay, we're all kind of, you know, we're the same, you know, he's just been doing it longer, you know? Mm-hmm. So I gave him some terrible advice and sent him on his way, and no one ever heard of him again. So,
I'm just kidding.
Mm-hmm.
And that man is now known as George Perez. No. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Let's see. It a similar story or similar kind of thing. Not similar, but especially it was early on once again in when I first started a couple years back, and at every convention I would create a new print to sell of some hero. And so I put on social media like and asking for suggestions of who, what print should I do? What character should I do on my next print? And it was kind of an innocent question, I thought. And a pro artist who I, you know, had met a couple of times came on there and said, you should make your own original stuff. Making prints is illegal. And that moment, like, it kind of, you know, let the wind out of my sails. And it really did make me think about like what I was doing and stuff. And it, like, I'm not going to say who the artist was, but like a couple years later, I seen his table and he had like a couple prints like that. I know that he had drawn in the past, but I know he didn't. He wasn't a creation of his, you know, so. But he's a really good guy, and I've talked to him since. But that was kind of a moment of like, you know, like kind of looking at myself. It kind of tore my geekness down, I guess. It knocked me down a peg or two.
Ooh, that's sometimes the worst.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, it happens.
Oh yeah, but what geeks you out the most, man?
Finding something new, like. And it doesn't have to be like a traditional geek thing, but like any kind of like new thing that I haven't been exposed to. And I guess an example, I'd never watched Downton Abbey and me and my wife started watching it. And now like it's an obsessive thing where I'm researching all of it. And now like but it's just like the newest, coolest thing to me. And like, I'm like, wow, how did like it seems amazing to me. And it's kind of inspired me from the way it tells a story, the way the characters interact, and just how vibrant like the personalities and the relationships are, you know? So this, finding something new like that, like something unexpected, like that always, you know, fires my geek up. So.
No, totally understand that. That's pretty darn amazing, truthfully. Yeah. That's very cool. But let's look at the other side of that one.
Oh, man.
You ready for it? You know what's coming.
Gotta bring everyone down, right?
what turns your geek off, man?
I think it's just fandom and geekdom in general has so many different layers and ages and generations. And it's kind of when, like, whether it's the new or the old generations or whatever differentiates one group from another, one person from another, and you see people putting each other down for liking a certain thing. And, like, it's fine if you don't like it, but to put, you know, put someone else down for, you know, like I just said Kyle Rayner a little bit earlier, and I said he's one of my favorites. The Hal Jordan fans might not appreciate that, especially when Hal Jordan first turned into the Spectre, died and went bad and turned into the Spectre after being Parallax and all that stuff. Like, somebody would be really upset with Kyle Rayner and bash that. Not that it ever actually happened to me, but I've seen it, especially in the way social media is so open. You see people just bashing each other for what they like. And it kind of brings me down a little bit, because I always seen geekdom and fandom and everything like that as being, like, open and sharing everything. And, you know, you can have a debate about what's better, but to, you know, verbally abuse somebody for that, it's rough. Like, I don't like it.
I totally could understand that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, we've all been there. We have right. all yeah. been there. What yeah. fictional character would you like to meet the most?
I kind of went over these with my wife a little bit, because at first I was going to take them cold, and then she was interested. So we were bouncing ideas or bouncing the questions off of each other. And she decided to answer this for me. And I agree with her. For me personally, she was like, I know you want to meet Captain America. And I said, okay, all right. Why? She said, you're always talking about him and you're hyped up about him. And I said, well, what about Superman? She said, well, Superman too. Yeah. And I said, what about Gandalf? She was like, yeah. And I was like, Ned Stark. And then even Lord Grantham from Downton Abbey. So there was like a theme of basically any paternal wise figure that everyone respects from some kind of authority, and that they're always trying to do good. So I think I know it's sort of a cop-out, but any of those type, like, I really would like to meet someone with that kind of power and authority that, you know, is really trying to do good. They might mess up a lot or mess up a little bit, you know, but
oh, sure.
Ultimately something like a Superman or a Captain America. So something like that. Like, I'm always drawn to that. So that's who I want to meet.
Hey, that's nothing wrong with that one. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
On the opposite end of the spectrum of that, I think Joffrey Baratheon would probably be. I would.
He has come up before.
I'm sure he has. As a dad now, like, I want to take that kid and no, he's pretty awful. Like in a good way, he's a love to hate character. But I would not want to meet him. Like, he's just about. And I even with Ramsay a little bit further on. In the series, I still hate Joffrey more for some reason. I don't know why. Like, it's just so. Okay, so that's a pretty clean cut choice right there.
That's a tough call, Joffrey or Ramsay.
Ramsay, I don't like. He's evil. He's sadistic, but he's crazy. Joffrey, I think, is just.
He's just. Oh,
he is like.
Ramsay, there is no redeeming for either of them, but Joffrey has a simple place.
Yeah, I think Ramsay, in a weird way, sort of earned his horrible position when Joffrey was just there, and he's entitled, like super entitled, I guess.
And you can imagine he was, like, going to get worse.
He would have been worse than Ramsay ever thought he could be, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Ba weep, grana weep, ninny bomb.
No. And tell people where you got that from.
that's the intergalactic greeting from Transformers the movie. Cup knew it when he met the Junkions and the Sharktacons, I believe, too. So, no, but actually, my favorite one is from the Stephen King's universe, Dark Towers. There are other worlds than these, Gunslinger. I always thought that was like the coolest thing that anyone could say right before they die. Like, so I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but when Roland was about to lose Chamber the first time, he told him, "Don't worry about it. There's other worlds than these, Gunslinger." So I thought that was cool. Cool enough to kind of name my website after that. So
very nice.
But either one of those works.
That is awesome. That is truly, truly awesome. Oh, yeah, that's cool. All right. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Okay. I think working on something where that I was committed to that I had, like, absolutely no passion for. Paycheck or not, that is brutal. Because I've done it before in a long thing that I had to work on for months, and it was one of the worst experiences of my life as far from a creative standpoint. So yeah, that's definitely it. Like a passionless thing. Like, I don't know how to, I can't do it. So.
No, I totally understand that. I could see that. That's actually one of the number one answers on the show.
I believe it.
All right. What geek occupation would you like to do, though?
I'm kind of doing it, like, at a very low level. I want to write my own stories. I want to draw what I want to draw and create the worlds that you know, inspire me personally, which, you know, and show the world what I'm doing. So as an occupation, if I could. And the only thing missing is the millions and millions of dollars, you know, that I'm sure it's going to happen, right? So,
oh, of course. It's going to happen for all of us. That's right.
So, like, I mean, I'm in a way, I'm kind of already doing it. Like being a successful writer, I guess, would be my dream occupation.
Oh, sure. No, totally could see that. All right. Are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, this is the toughest one. This is for all the gold, man. Just remember that. Okay. KJ, what is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Oh, man. I think everything is from a creator's perspective. So to be the Miyazaki of whatever it is that I'm doing. He owns his own studio and puts out whatever animated film he wants every couple of years. And he retires every 4 or 5 years and puts a new film out after retirement. To have that kind of freedom and ability to do that and to support a family and to do, like, being able to do all that and to support multiple other artists that can realize their dreams through the studio that I would love to create one day. Basically, yeah, to be whatever version of it is of me that is Miyazaki. If that's in the future, a ton of animated films like that would be the ultimate geek fantasy for me.
So that's pretty damn awesome, actually.
Yeah,
that is pretty cool. Well, KJ, I have some good news for you. You've made it through the geek seat. Congratulations.
Oh. Huzzah. Man.
Huzzah. Huzzah. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $2,000.967.
Well, thank you. It's the greatest prize I've ever won.
Yes, well, it really does devalue as you get closer to the station. And don't try to do the math on that, especially the cents part, because
my math's terrible. So
exactly. So, yeah. So, but anyway, no, it's been glad to finally have you here. For those people who want to check your stuff out online, where should they go?
The first place they should look for is my website, which has links to everything. That's kjeldridgeworlds.com, and excuse my name, KJ Eldridge. On Instagram, if you want to see a bunch of my art, it's KJ Lunar. That's KAYJAY Lunar. For Facebook, if you want to see kind of like the catch-all for everything that I'm doing, it's the Facebook page is The Other Worlds of KJ Eldridge. Pretty full of myself, so my name is on everything. Twitter, which I don't really post too much on there, it's KJ Lunar Knight. So I haven't quite figured Twitter out yet.
Well, we will have links to all those in the show notes so people can click on them and check them out. KJ, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll see you at a con down the road.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
I want to sing that rock and roll. I want to electrify my soul. Because everybody been making a shout so big and loud.
Hello, everybody. Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment. Michelle here. And starting out, because it's just what I do, a goodbye to Alan Longmuir, co-founder of the Bay City Rollers. Passed away in his native Scotland July 2nd at the age of 70. Only song I know by them is Saturday Night, but I was just really surprised to find out how many of my online friends love the Bay City Rollers. So, cheers and travel on well to Alan Longmuir. Tom Petty's family and former Heartbreakers have put together a 4-CD box set with 60 tracks called An American Treasure. Previously unreleased material, it will come out on September 28th. There will also be a double CD set. Not seeing anything yet about collector vinyl on this. We'll have to see. It's got studio stuff, live stuff, deep cuts, alternate versions of songs. His daughter Adria and his wife Dana helped put it together, along with Ben Montench and Mike Campbell of the Heartbreakers. SiriusXM debuted one of the songs. You can check it out. It's called Keep a Little Soul. There's a video for it that's all vintage footage, candid footage of Tom and the Heartbreakers from back in the day. It'll make you a little bit sad, but mostly it'll make you smile. Walter Becker of Steely Dan died last September, and New York is honoring his memory in a very appropriate way. Becker grew up in the Forest Hills section of Queens, and they are going to co-name that street Walter Becker Way. The sign will be on the corner of 112th Street and 72nd Drive, and they'll be unveiling the sign in late October. Elvis Costello has called off his European tour after he had surgery, undisclosed but quote-unquote very aggressive form of cancer. In his statement, he said the malignancy was small. They got it in one surgery, but the recovery period has just taken a lot out of him. He does say he's got an album coming out in October, and he plans to go out on tour after that. He did say that men should talk to their friends and see a doctor and, quote, act as swiftly as you may in these matters. It could save your life. So I will pass that PSA along. Guys, you don't get as much attention as the women do, but Elvis is right. It's very important. Talk to your friends. Talk to your doctor. And act fast if you have to. Get ready for a deluge of print stuff in coming months. There was a huge, long feature in Rolling Stone about Prince's estate getting ready to authorize tons of music, something like 1,000 songs, memorabilia, authorizing a Prince-themed hotel. I don't know what he would think of all this, but what can you do? Sony Legacy has already gotten the rights to the post-Warner Brothers stuff, and in 2021 they will begin releasing the Warner Brothers stuff, as well as all the unreleased material. The first official release from the vault, the infamous vault, is coming out September 21st. It's called Piano and a Microphone, 1983. There's sort of a famous, semi-famous tape of Prince alone at a piano, doing solo versions of Purple Rain, 17 Days, Joni Mitchell's A Case of You. It's 9 songs, half an hour long, and kind of legendary, and Paisley Park shipped a box of 8,000 of Prince's cassettes to L.A., and this guy managed to find it in that box of 8,000 cassettes. So that is the first official release, and again, that's September 21st. And this past Friday, the 13th, marked the 33rd anniversary of Live Aid. And it's a day that I always remember, despite all the back and forth about how effective it really was. It still stands as just an astonishing achievement. This was before cell phones, before the internet, before email, before even faxes. They had telexes. But it focused the world's attention like nothing else I can think of in our lifetimes. And there were some clunkers, legendary clunkers among the performances, but there were some timeless ones. Of course, the Queen one. The U2 performance, which can just move you to tears, David Bowie. It was an amazing show, and I think those of us who saw it on TV or were lucky enough to be there will never, ever forget it. And maybe it's up to us to make it mean something. Use it as an inspiration to feed the world in whatever way you interpret that to mean. Not a bad thought. Feed the world. And we will catch you next time.
Mommy's going to the beauty parlor, darling. But I'm leaving you with your favorite friend, Roger. He's going to take very, very good care of you. Because if he doesn't, he's going back to the science lab.
What's wrong with that tank?
Nothing with you, Baby Herman. You were great. You were perfect. You were better than perfect. Just Roger. He keeps blowing his lines.
Roger.
What's this?
A tweeting bird.
Tweeting bird. Roger, read the script. Look what it says. It says rabbit gets clunked.
Rabbit sees stars.
Not birds.
Stars! Can we lose the playback, please?
You're killing me. Killing me.
For crying out loud, Roger. How the hell many times do we have to do this damn scene? No! I'll be in my trailer. Take it a nap!
Excuse me,
please, Butch. Mo, I can give you stars. Just drop the refrigerator in my head one more time.
Drink up on your head 23 times already.
I can take it. Don't worry about me.
I'm not worried about you. I'm worried about the refrigerator.
This is the tale of an up-and-coming movie star named Roger Rabbit and a down-and-out private detective.
And stay out!
Named Eddie Valiant.
Ooga booga!
Every moment they were together was a new adventure in trouble.
Hide me, Eddie! Please!
It's a motion picture about friendship.
Eddie, get in! Please, Eddie! Don't tell me you're making a big mistake!
Love. Compassion.
All right, I'm sorry I yanked your ears.
All the time you yanked my ears?
Murder.
Marvin Acme. The rabbit cacked him last night.
Remember, you never saw me.
Sex.
I'd do anything for my husband, Mr. Valiant. Anything.
And violence.
Tunes gets him every time.
You wouldn't have any idea where the rabbit might be.
Got a thing for rabbits, huh?
The whole thing stinks like yesterday's diapers.
It's a comedy a little different from all the rest.
I'm a pig!
I'm a toon! I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
But tell me, Eddie, is that a rabbit in your pocket or are you just happy to see me?
Touchstone Pictures and Steven Spielberg present a Robert Zemeckis film.
We toons may act idiotic, but we're not stupid.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
30 years. Can you believe it? 30 years. That's how I'm going to start this segment. 30 years. My God.
I am shocked. 30 years. And I remember seeing it at the movie theater.
I do as well.
I do too.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we are here to celebrate this anniversary of this landmark movie. We got a great crew to do it, starting with our movie man, Alex Autry.
It's always a pleasure getting to talk movies with you guys. You know that.
Absolutely. And a classic movie here, too. Not the latest and greatest.
It is. I actually looked and it made no money at the box office this weekend.
Of course. No. So. But yet it was on cable. I did actually watch this on cable.
I saw it. I saw the last half of it on
Viceland.
Viceland.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
And then watched it Sunday on Hulu.
Yes. I've never even heard of Viceland before, but I was
Neither, but it was there.
It was. It was. And I'm glad for it, too, because that means I didn't have to rent it. Also, Mary Ogle is here on the main station with us.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here to talk about one of my favorite movies.
Oh, great. Great. I am glad to hear that. Yes, you now we, I mean, we so much we hear you talk about Doctor Who. It's nice to get you out of that part of the station.
It is. It's very nice of you to unchain me and let me out for a little while.
We got another ESW to record this week, so you're going to be out for a little while to get some stale air and then go right back in. We also have a new voice joining us on the station, and welcome Jason.
Gonna review the rabbit.
Awesome. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jason.
I host a podcast, Hunter Queen, that's been on and off due to some personal reasons, but it will be coming back this September. Pretty much every episode deals with something horror themed, and I add, because I have a bachelor's in psychology and philosophy, psych and philosophy aspects to it.
Awesome. That sounds great. We are great to have you with us. That's going to be, yeah, now I'm going to feel like I'm being psychoanalyzed this whole segment. So, but that's not unusual for us. So
nothing new.
No, we're all kinds of crazy here. Well, how we usually start these things is by telling our, you know, initial impressions when we first saw this movie. What did we think? What drew it to us? Jason, since you're new with us, what was your first experience with this movie?
Back in the 80s, when entertainment news shows ruled the earth, you had Entertainment Tonight and two other knockoffs that I can't remember. But I remember right before Wheel of Fortune, they were showing footage of Roger Rabbit. They actually showed the entire Maroon cartoon with Roger trying to save baby Herman and then him breaking character. And it's a cartoon character that says damn, which I couldn't believe because when the cartoon characters curse. And then I realized it was this movie called Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So I had to see it. And my friends were just not interested in cartoons at this point. They were tired. So of all people, my father took me. It was great. And the theater was packed. And this, you have to understand, this is during a time that you couldn't reserve movie theater seats like you can today. So this is during a time where there was a line around the movie theater. You don't get those anymore. And I think I've seen this movie more times than I can count. I had so many different versions. There are so many different rumors about what was going to happen. I actually have the script Toon Platoon, you know, the supposed sequel, the original novelization of Roger Rabbit. I played that video game that was awful for the Nintendo and that, you know, that famous 800 number, which I'm sure we'll get into. So I really, really love this movie and tried to get into all the knockoffs that came after it, but I don't think anything really topped this movie when it came out. It wasn't just cartoons with humans. It was also Robert Zemeckis, but a lot of people argue that this was his last great film after Back to the Future 2.
Yes, yes, very much so. Mary, what about you?
I was a child of animation. I mean, I adored animation growing up. You know, all the Disney stuff, anything I could get my hand on, animation, comics, whatever. So, but I was 24 when this came out, or 23, and it was not cool to go and see this movie then. And I was like, I don't care. I'm going to go see it because it looks fantastic, and I was amazed at how adult it was, and I don't mean adult in a, you know, X-rated way, but adult in a really believable, beautiful story with grown-up themes that had animation along with it. And that really struck me, and it stayed with me over the years. I watched this movie a million times, and it holds up every time. It never gets old.
Wow, we've got two people who watched this movie more than a million times. That's a lot of viewings to compete with. Alex, have you seen it a million too? Did we lose him? Did we lose me?
I can hear you.
I can hear you.
I had my mic muted.
Gotcha.
So no, as far as my experience with this film, I saw the last half on Viceland, and then I watched it on Hulu. I grew up as a child of the 70s, and 70s meant Saturday morning cartoons. So you had the Warner Brothers cartoons going, and I was a Disney-phile. So I had this love of Disney. I had this love of the Warner Brothers cartoons. And obviously we have this amazing moment where you're putting the two of them together, which honestly, I mean, even today, you think it can't be done. And so I'm a sophomore or junior in high school at the time, and there must have been 9 of us that got together, that went to see this as a group, and just took up an entire row at one of the local theaters and just laughed hysterically throughout the whole film. And watching it yesterday, just to get some added research time in, it's amazing how well the film still holds up. And I know it was said just a moment ago that this was Zemeckis's last good film after Back to the Future 2. I would contend that it was actually his first good film after Back to the Future 2, which was a 90-minute commercial for Back to the Future 3. So
that's fair. Mike, what about you?
Well, like everybody else, I've seen it at least a million times also. But it was actually pretty awesome because at the time I was a sophomore in college, and we were, you know, I was already studying animation at the time. And so myself and a lot of my friends who were in the same major in us, we all went as, you know, a group to go see Roger Rabbit, because we had just gotten done the semester before taking a history of animation course. And to see all these characters and come to life, especially in that era, and the looks, the feel, which they captured, because I remember people were coming back, that's not how Bugs Bunny looked, or that's not how Tweety Bird looked, or whoever, because that's how they looked in 1947. They didn't do the modern looks and everything. They just did a great job at that. And like everyone else is saying, Zemeckis did a great job on this. And this was before CGI, folks. This is before computer animation. They had to literally overdo overlays. If you ever watch any of the bonus materials, it's just incredible what they did to make it look like the way they did with the characters interacting with each other.
Yeah, this is one of those movies that the making of story is almost, or I would say almost, it is equally as intriguing and thrilling as the actual movie itself. Just all the behind the scenes stuff that happened with this. And I know we're only going to be able to get to a portion of it, but well, like you all, I saw it in the theater. I can't say that I've seen it a million times, maybe half a million. But I certainly was one impressed with what I saw. And I do remember at the time, I mean, it was a big deal. Growing up, like you, many of you guys in the 70s and 80s, I can't think of two more iconic figures than Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse. And to see them on the screen together was just like, Alex, you put the nail on the head. When I saw it yesterday or last night, I just couldn't believe, like, I still couldn't believe it. I'm like, you couldn't even do this now. Like I just... it's amazing, you know, to think that both studios kind of coexisted. And I know that there was some contention and there was a lot of, you know, give and take, but they made it happen. And I have to believe that a lot of it was, you know, Bob Zemeckis certainly as a director, but, you know, producer Spielberg was an active part of this too. In fact, I'm very surprised that he didn't undertake it himself, but, when I look back on it, I'm surprised that he didn't do that. But I guess, you know, I know he had a bunch of other stuff go on too. So, I want to get into the meat of it and exactly what makes this film so special. And we'll start with you, Mary. What is it about this movie that you feel has made it a classic, has made it Stand the test of time. What is this about it? What that makes it like special to you?
Well, I think it's three things. One is the world building. The world building here is incredible. I mean, this is not an easy thing to do, melding live action and animation and make it seamless, make it feel like a whole instead of two separate things. And it's just done so beautifully here. I mean, you really believe that these characters are interacting with each other. And it's just, you know, especially Bob Hoskins. I mean, he's amazing in this. It's genius. And the other thing is the story is just, it's a deceptively simple story. You know, it's just sort of your basic good versus evil, kind of a classic hero's journey for Bob Hoskins. But it's told in such a creative and colorful and an imaginative way. It draws you in and you're riveted from the beginning. I mean, I am amazed that it holds up to this day. I really am, but it does.
Alex, what about you?
It's a couple of things. I think the main thing that makes this movie work is Bob Zemeckis is Bob Hoskins. The fact is that he spends a solid 75% of the movie working opposite something that's not there and makes it believable. He is an uncredited, appreciated talent. And whenever you see him in a movie, you're like, oh yeah, Bob Hoskins, amazing actor. And then the movie's over and you forget about him. And it's probably because he just gets into the character so much and you don't think the fact that, you know, that's not Bob Hoskins on the screen. That's Eddie Valiant. The other thing that really makes this movie work is the people who are behind the scenes on it. Zemeckis at that time was pretty much the golden boy and Spielberg. So with the two of them together, they were able to use their clout to really help make the movie what it is. The plot and the story are rather simple, but are told elegantly. But for me, the main key, the linchpin to this movie is, does Bob Hoskins believe that he's on screen with these animated characters?
Jason?
I grew up watching so many Bugs Bunny, Tom and Jerry, Walt Disney cartoons. One of the things that I found to be intriguing was a Tom and Jerry cartoon where Tom and Jerry actually were going to kill themselves at the end of the episode, that because they both fell in love with like a female version of themselves and it didn't work out. So you see them on the train tracks and they're about to, you know, meet their demise. And you see this in Roger Rabbit where it, first of all, this movie broke so many rules and you couldn't get away with this movie today for three reasons. One, we might as well get into it, it's bestiality, because you have an anamorphic rabbit married to a human. I mean, it's an animated human, but a human nonetheless. They are cursing and swearing. I mean, not just cursing. They are saying damn a few times, and Yosemite Sam, you know, says his biscuits are burning. You know what that pretty much is. You could, and not to mention, the biggest thing was how many cartoon characters from different studios could be incorporated into this movie. Popeye was supposed to be in this, and for reasons to this day, I don't know why he wasn't put in there, and I don't know what kind of royalties had to be paid to have him in the. They were even trying to bring in the Fleischer cartoons, and I think at one point even some more of the black and white cartoons were going to have their own section, which explains why later Spielberg created Tiny Toon Adventures and had that segment for the black and white characters. But it wasn't insulting to a kid's intelligence, because it was pretty much telling us that, yeah, they're cartoon characters, but they still have problems like you and me behind the scenes, which I found to be interesting. It's not just that Baby Herman, you know, talks like an adult. It's that's what he's like behind the scenes, is that he's like any Hollywood star in the 40s or 50s that he gets a check and he goes to the races. I love that. And it's told well. So I think the voice acting and the we also had these original characters. I mean, Roger Rabbit, in a way, he's kind of based like Mickey because he's got the overalls and the gloves. And Baby Herman's kind of like a cross between Fudd and Tweety. And Jessica Rabbit, I guess you could take your pick from the Tex Avery cartoons from, you know, Tom and Jerry, you know, from the Droopy Dog cartoon. So there was a love letter to the cartoons of yesteryear, and also was a love letter to all the classic noir films that were still showing on TV back in the 80s, especially I grew up in New York. So my PBS affiliation, WLAW New York, would still show like these Dick Tracy movies and these gangster movies that, you know, you can find them anywhere today. So it was definitely a love letter to certain genres. And I think that's why it still holds up more now than it wasn't just, oh, let's put humans and cartoon characters together. And yeah, Bob Hoskins came out of nowhere. I mean, we found out that he was, you know, he had this Cockney English accent, and who knew that he was able to hide that and play like this tough talking gangster type of guy that I guess he used the voice later for Mario Brothers and a couple other films before he passed away. But yeah, this was definitely a love letter to everything and anything animation wise and classic crime drama whodunit wise.
Yeah. Absolutely. You hit on so many good things there. I was like, oh, I need to talk more about that. I need to talk more about that. But yeah, I mean, just so much to this movie. And the fact that it's a tribute, I mean, yeah, you can look at it, oh, it's just a tribute to old classic cartoons. No, it's also a tribute to the detective noir stuff from the 40s as well. I mean, I love the fact that it's so deceptively, as Mary pointed out, it's deceptively simple. It's so like whether the murder mystery and then the fact that, you know, that the tunes, all they want to do is make people laugh. You know, that's their purpose in life. It just, there's so much that's simple about this, but yet it's told in this very complex storyline, but yet it's very deceptively simple. Mike, what about you? What really, you know, brings you to this dance?
Well, the history that goes with it, like I mentioned earlier, it was my passion at the time. It still is in a lot of ways. And they touched on so many of the history of animation throughout this movie. You see characters like Bobo the Clown. You get to see Betty Boop. You get to see a lot of the, you know, the Looney Tunes and the, you know, melodies and such, cartoon characters throughout this, like when Eddie goes to Toontown for the first time, you see all those different characters that have not been seen since the 1940s. And it's just awesome. And they did the research on this. And the existing characters are awesome. But, you know, you also had the Warner Brothers and Disney coming together for the first time, basically, and doing, you know, putting their characters in the same universe. It's almost like Marvel and DC in some ways. And
which ironically are now owned by Warner Brothers and Disney.
Exactly. How about that? Which is kind of funny with that. But the cool thing with it in a lot of ways is you get all that. And you literally, you know, for like someone like me who is a huge animation person, you go like literally scene by scene by scene to find the characters like Clarabelle Cow, or you got to see Tar Baby from Song of the South in this real briefly, but Tar Baby is in there. And, you know, it's just amazing to see the different characters that are, they throw in here, and even anything from the gorilla at the bar, or, you know, Donald and Mickey and Donald and Daffy doing the piano against each other, the duel. Yeah,
that's a classic scene.
Yeah.
That's an absolutely classic scene. And that's just a warm up to, you know, Bugs and Mickey. But when we see that for the first time, it just blows your mind.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That's the last time I work with someone with a speech impediment.
Exactly. And you know, for all the history making that it was, I mean, we're talking about the two major influential studios of animation in the history of movies, right? Warner Brothers and Disney working together. You do get these like little spot appearances by smaller companies that also had great cartoon characters like Betty Boop, like Woody Woodpecker. You know, Woody Woodpecker's in this, which is pretty awesome.
Or Droopy. You haven't seen Droopy, you know?
Yes, that's true. Very nice scene with Droopy.
One of my favorites in there, and it always gets me tickled because it could be considered a film flub, is The Reluctant Dragon.
Yes.
Is in it. And when Eddie goes to Toontown.
Multiple times.
He walks, the Reluctant Dragon passes by, and then, bam, he gets into the car wreck. He gets out of the car, and the Reluctant Dragon walks by again. And my first thought is, okay, film flub. And then my second thought is, nope, just cheap animation. They're reusing cells. Because that was something that they did at the time. So it wasn't uncommon to see a repeat. So it explains, it tells me that in Toontown, that's commonplace.
In Toontown, you have backgrounds that just go on and on.
And on and on and on. And on.
Exactly. Yeah. It looks the same way. Now, like going in circles.
The Roadrunner and Coyote make an appearance at the end of the movie in the big group shot.
Yep.
And they're in there at the insistence of Steven Spielberg. But they weren't created until after 1947.
When
the movie takes place.
Yeah, because I thought Roadrunner was early 1950s.
Yeah. So it was something that Spielberg just kind of wanted in there because he thought, because he wanted iconic characters. So that's why they're in there, but they weren't actually, they should, we'll just explain it as they hadn't gotten their break yet.
They were newcomers to the field, yes.
Yeah, they were new.
For me, what makes this amazing is not just the, you know, cameos by so many popular characters that we're all familiar with, but the fact that they create all these characters, like Jason pointed out, that fit in so perfectly. You don't even realize that they weren't characters before this movie, like Baby Herman, Benny the Cab, the Wolf Patrol or whatever, the hyenas, right?
The hyenas, yeah.
The weasels.
The weasels. Sorry, weasels. Yes.
Yeah.
But Lena Hyena was the one I was thinking of too. Yeah. But
the weasels, I thought, were the villains from The Wind and the Willows. Is that not correct?
Yes, they are.
Because I've always thought that. Okay. I just wanted to make sure because I was like, weren't they? Yeah. So if I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
It's dedication.
Yeah. And I love how Squiggy was one of the voices. from Lord of the Rings, surely. It was awesome.
But then also, you know, I think Roger fits right in there. And for me personally, Roger walks a very fine line between awesome and annoying. Like there are, I can really understand Eddie's frustration with him a lot of times. But yet I feel like he perfectly fits in as a legitimate type cartoon character during this era. And we're going to have to stop for a second and just, you know, bow to the creation of Jessica Rabbit. I mean, talk about a character that really blew up after this movie. I mean, if there's any character that comes out of this movie that has her own everything, it's Jessica Rabbit. It was just an amazing thing because she's actually one of the few cartoonish human characters in this, right? She's not an animal.
She's based on, like I said, on the Tex Avery cartoons. If you remember,
sure.
Red Hot, yeah. Riding Hood, that's what she. The problem was is that parents complained a little bit because of, you know, the rabbit dating the almost human character. But the second thing was, I don't know what Jessica. It's different in the original script. What her motivations were supposed to be. I'm glad they changed it, and there's actually a sequel that's a novelization that says that in the original novelization, everything that happened was a nightmare for her. But the book has nothing to do with the movie. But the point being is that Jessica interesting character, but it's just kind of one-dimensional. She looks great and everything, and she's a lounge singer. But past all that, I don't know what else she really brings other than it's an attractive redhead.
Yeah, see, I actually don't agree with that, because I feel like the character of Jessica and also Baby Herman and even Roger Rabbit in a way, they're kind of promoting one of the themes of the whole movie, which is that they're, in a way, they're prisoners of their outward facades, but their personalities, the core of who they are, has nothing to do with how they look. So I think one of the themes is, you know, don't make judgments based on appearances. That's not who these characters really are. They have more depth than that.
Well, exactly.
No, I get that. Well, I get the fact she goes, I'm not bad, I'm drawn that way. I understand that. I'm just saying that I wish it would have been pushed a little more.
I do think they do kind of leave it where you're supposed to wonder exactly whose side she's on. And in doing so, you lose a little bit of her character because they don't get, you don't, you know, even at the end, it's like, oh, can he really trust her? I mean, we want to, but you know, she is a femme fatale. So it's kind of like, well, that traditionally you don't trust those guys. You know what I mean? Those characters, they come up and they'll stab you. And so, but to Mary's point, I like the fact that yes, she is literally drawn that way. And yeah, but the fact is, you know, I still see at conventions everywhere, there's Jessica Rabbit. She's the most popular character that I see cosplayed that come out of this movie. And there's no denying the fact that, you know, Jessica sold a bazillion laser discs and DVDs with people trying to use the freeze frame on her, you know?
Is it possible? Did they forget? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say that Jessica Rabbit not only became the iconic character of this film, but also gave a lot of guys hope. Because I can't tell you, I mean, myself included, how many extremely funny guys wound up hooking up with the hot girl. So I think that absolutely goes a long way. I think that she proved it 30 years ago. It still holds true today. If you're really, really funny, hot women will be attracted to you.
Exactly. And that was the great thing. And it was so well done, the voice with her, you know, of course, Kathleen Turner being the voice of Jessica, but not the.
Do you know why she was uncredited? Is there? Do you know that story? Anybody?
Yeah.
Jason, do you
yeah.
know?
It's, who was the voice, the singing voice? Was it Amy Irving?
Amy
yes.
Irving.
Yes.
Yes. Amy yes. Irving.
And Amy Irving is listed in the credits as the voice of Jessica Rabbit.
Yes. The ex Mrs. Spielberg.
Yeah. Yes. So, wonder how she got a part in the film.
Yeah. Well. It's interesting to say the least. I also like the fact, though, that the crows from Dumbo have a cameo in this as yeah. the yes. they play the instruments when she says, go on, get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the penguins from Mary Poppins. And there was a reason for that as well, because in Mary Poppins, you had the penguins interact with human characters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that was a callback. That's why the penguins are pretty much doing what they did in Mary Poppins. They're doing the same thing. They're waiters.
Well, and it was interesting because Mary Poppins was almost 20 years after this. You know, if you go by the timeline, because
chronologically, yeah.
chronologically, because this is 1947 and early 60s for Mary Poppins. So it was really interesting. Yeah. But there's a lot of that in this. There's like a couple different, like, oh, wait a minute, they're not around yet, you know, that type of thing.
Yes. Well, if you believe there was, you know, there was really a Toontown, you know, in our universe, you know, so.
But of course there was. Come on. Hello.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
It's a documentary, right?
Yeah. Right.
All right. So we've talked all about, you know, the main characters and the cartoon characters, but I have to talk about the performance by the amazing Christopher Lloyd in this. Of course, you know, Zemeckis has worked with him as Doc Brown, but in this one, I think, and I know that, you know, Lloyd had played villains before, But I think this is his ultimate villain, right? You know,
the greatest Disney villain, the absolute.
Yeah. Oh, good call.
His origins.
Good call. Yes, actually, go expound on that.
Okay, so it wasn't discussed in the movie, and I did research. This is supposed to be a cartoon villain that got his head hit one too many times by a safe and anvils. So apparently this cartoon character went insane and thought that it really was a cartoon villain. And so it reinvented itself and took the weasels and made it the private police, and he became Judge Doom. And there have always been these rumors that, you know, Spielberg and Zemeckis are saying no. And at the time when Roy Disney was still alive, and the same thing with Michael Eisner, it depends who you ask to this day. But Judge Doom is supposedly the toon responsible for killing Bambi's mom. Mm-hmm. Now, it then fast forwarded where Gaston may be the culprit for killing Bambi's mom, because I don't know when Bambi technically takes place. But if you go by when Bambi was released and when Judge Doom starts to surface and when he starts – he finds a way to kill toons, you got to put two and two together. And this is the most despicable villain I've ever seen, because – we never know what's underneath that human costume. We just get a taste of it. Mm-hmm. And it's still the stuff of nightmares when he goes, "Remember me, Eddie, when I killed your brother? I talk just like this." I mean, that's a...
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah. It's the fact that he created the dip. And it's so disturbing, even to this day, when you take that red shoe.
Yeah,
it's just like he takes the glove and he's just like dipping it in. And it's like boiling a lobster, because you see the shoe, like, it starts to form teeth and it's begging for its life, and it's just – and I think Nancy Cartwright voiced the shoe at the time. So, yeah. And you can see, like, once Judge Doom picks his, you know, his hand out of the vat, it almost looks like blood. And it's great sound effects too, like when he's curling up that rubber glove. So, yeah, Lloyd has played a lot of characters, but – out of all of them, it's either Doc Brown or Judge Doom, and for me, it's Judge Doom.
Yeah, that scene with the shoe, that still haunts me. I can't watch it. I have to always have to fast forward through it.
Oh, yeah.
It is so haunting. And on Dip. Dip is like the worst thing ever. It unmakes you. It is the most horrifying thing.
Yeah.
No, sorry. Real quick. I was thinking, you know, when I was watching this, I was like, oh, I wonder if Michelle's ever seen this. And I was like, Michelle, have you ever seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit? She's like, no. And I thought about it for a second. And I'm like, yeah, that's okay. You don't need to see this. Like, I was just like, I was like, she's not going to make it past the shoe and the dip. She's just not. That's the scene where you're like, you have to decide if your kids are going to go, right?
Yeah. There's an ethical dilemma for me. About the introduction of Dip. The shoe did nothing wrong.
Right.
The shoe did absolutely nothing wrong. He picks up the shoe, he puts it in the dip, and basically unmakes it. And you just kind of sit there and go, did these police officers and detective just watch a elected official kill something?
Murder.
Straight up murder something. And one, not say anything about it, except for, wow, he's a crackpot. Or two, report it. I mean, how messed up was it? But I do like, in watching it the second time, I was able, or watching it again for the first time in several years, I loved the callbacks to things with Judge Doom. when we first hear about Doom, we hear that he had a spread around a bajillion or something like that amount of money to get himself elected and bought himself the election. Later, we find out that Eddie's brother was killed while they were trying to stop a toon from stealing a few simoleons.
Yeah.
From the First National Bank of Toontown. It's the same money.
Yes, absolutely.
It's absolutely the same money, because obviously Toon money should only work in Toontown. So yeah, I just think that, you know, it's weird to see callbacks like that later on when you're paying attention to it and not gawking at Jessica.
Well, it's kind of interesting too, because when Judge Doom captures Roger at the bar,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they bring in the dip and they're about to put, you know, Roger into it, and Roger gets the drink and everything. Then Eddie knocks over the dip and Judge Doom backs away from it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And they purposely said earlier that it has no effect on it, on people, but why did he back away from it? You find out later. It's kind of like a little bit of foreshadowing now that you know the story, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a great job and a terrifying thing. Now I don't know. I've never read the original novel, Who Censored Roger Rabbit. I understand it's quite different, that it focuses more on comic strip characters rather than cartoon characters.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that true, Jason?
Yeah. What it is that the way that the characters talk is that you get the comic strip balloon that goes over. And what happened was Roger Rabbit has been murdered, and apparently there's this doppelganger that could last for a certain amount of time before it gets erased into nothingness. So he does hire Eddie to help him solve his own murder before the doppelganger disappears. It's a little darker. Again, it deals with fictional comic book characters than, because at the time my brain locked up with the author, but he just couldn't get his hands on getting the rights for classic cartoon characters. But again,
Gary Wolf, by the way.
Right, Gary Wolf, I'm sorry. Once Roger Rabbit was adapted into a movie, there was this whole thing how Roger Rabbit was going to take place and who the villain was going to be. And originally it was going to be Baby Herman, I believe. But once everything was said and done, after the movie was a success and there was talks of the sequel, Wolf eventually wrote a novelization called Who Plugged Roger Rabbit, and it does take place in the movie universe. And again, that's when Jessica had a nightmare about Who Censored, because she wakes up thinking that she was in the Who Censored world, not the Who Framed world. But the novelization, it's not terrible, but and you can get it off of Kindle, but if you never read it, it's not as enjoyable as what they were able to bring into the movie. There's better chemistry between Roger and Eddie, and a better backstory with Eddie on why he's such a sourpuss. There's really, you're not missing much with Who Censored.
The book is much, much darker.
Yes.
And I don't think that it's... It's interesting to see how this movie gets made and coming off of the book, because yeah, the book's a lot darker and just doesn't have what I'd call Hollywood appeal. But even in the early scripts of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Roger's supposed to die in a crossfire at the end
of the dip. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, there was this whole thing, I think, and I forget what, yeah, he was supposed to be dipped, and yeah, I don't know how they were going to get away with that.
Mm-mm. Well, we've heard talks, you know, for decades. We've heard talks of a sequel. Nothing recently, and I think, yes, due to, look, I mean, the fact that we're probably never going to see Iron Man and Batman in the same film, unless it's a Lego film, which I'm still holding out hope for that. I don't think we're going to see like cooperation of this magnitude. So I don't think, I mean, where Disney could make another Roger Rabbit movie, I don't think we are likely to, just because it would be sort of anticlimactic at this point.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of interesting too, because you mentioned it, you know, and we've mentioned multiple times actually how Disney and Warner Brothers agreed to this, but all the characters from the different studios had to have the same amount of lines.
Yes. Same amount of screen time.
Same amount of screen time.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause you know, God forbid one had one above the other.
Oh yeah. No, that was not allowed. Yeah. In fact, I remember it was a big contention because when they, you know, when we see Bugs and Mickey, you know, I think Mickey's chute opens. No, Bugs goes first, right? So Mickey's on screen for a little bit longer than Bugs is. So then they have to put Bugs in later on and add a few more like frames of him just to accommodate that.
Yeah,
because people were like the accountants and legal was counting the frames on this.
Well, exactly. And that's the kind of the interesting thing. And it was kind of nice to see because I think this was one of Mel Blanc's last voice roles.
Yeah.
I believe so. And, you know, I mean, and how awesome is it? Because he does Tweety, you know, and, you know, it's still some of those voices to this day, even though it's been two decades or more since we've lost Mel Blanc, some of those voices, some of those characters still sound wrong to me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And because I know he did Tweety and he did Bugs and Daffy.
It doesn't sound like Tweety, though. I mean, I know what the original Tweety looked like. And I know that Mel Blanc voiced Tweety, but I don't know. It sounded more like Bugs on helium for some reason. Even Daffy, I know that Mel Blanc was going up in years, and I know he would lose him. But I don't know what it was. Was he really this sick at the time? There's just something where his voice wasn't connecting with the characters for some reason.
I was more, I think, taken aback by Tweety's actions than his voice. I was thinking, like, when has Tweety ever been this mean? I mean,
well,
like,
he's been the original. Yeah, long before Sylvester. Yeah, Tweety's story is very interesting. Before he was adopted by Granny and Sylvester was trying to eat him, Tweety was painted beige and he was mistaken to be naked.
Okay.
And
right.
So he was just out and about in the world, and he was just building nests, and you had these cats that kept trying to eat him, and Tweety was just being vicious for being – I mean, Tweety was always vicious in a way, and I know that when Tiny Toons came around, you had Sweetie Bird that made – you know, it was supposed to be a knockoff of Tweety and be vicious, but I never liked this character because it was supposed to be like this innocent little thing, and – you know, again, appearances can be deceiving, and Tweety turned out to be like manipulative and, dare I say, almost a sociopath in the early days. But yeah, I'm not surprised when Tweety goes pities because he did that with Sylvester in a couple later cartoons. So it's kind of a callback, a hybrid of old and 50s and 60s with him and Sylvester. So that never really bothered me that much. It was more the voice, but. Yeah, the fact that he was going to kill Eddie for reasons I'm not sure. I mean, he knows who Eddie is. I mean,
they
know. I mean, that was the whole thing with Valiant and Valiant. I love those little newspaper snippets where I think there was something where Goofy was being blacklisted as a communist or something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's it just like I said, it took me aback. But that, you know, that being said, I thought everything else. All the other characters that I recognized were true to form. So, well, very cool. Well, unfortunately, we're sort of running out of time, and I know we could talk more about this. Like I said, if anybody out there, if you haven't seen the film, of course, we've spoiled the hell out of it. But if you haven't seen it, seen it. And if you haven't looked at the story of how this was made, I definitely encourage you. I mean, there are books, there are magazine articles, there are DVD, Blu-ray featurettes. Check them out because, like I said, it's very interesting, all the ins and outs, especially how each one of these scenes is choreographed. But if you were to sort of leave people with one impression or a legacy of this movie, we'll start with you, Jason. What would you say for people either who haven't seen it or what its legacy is ultimately over the last 30 years?
I think we've pretty much talked about it. The legacy pretty much is a dedication to it's a love letter to comedy and crime drama of yesteryear and how it's this really interesting hybrid of child humor and adult humor and not pushing over the edge like today's cartoons do, not shoving pop culture references and down our throats and not looking for a fart joke or any other toilet humor. I think the reason why Roger Rabbit works is because it respected not only the animators of the 30s and 40s, but the writers and the voice artists. And that's a big thing. And that's something that's really hard to do, especially with all these 21st century kids' entertainment, whether it's, you know, live action or not. And I think we know that why half of them are being forgotten, because they're so concerned about shoving pop culture references down our throats. So that's why Roger Rabbit is still talked about today.
Yeah, good call. Mary?
I think, first of all, I agree with everything you just said. But also, I think for me, one of the reasons why it still holds up today is just that it works. Everything works together as a whole. There's nothing extraneous. There's nothing just stuck in there. It's got a great story. It's got beautiful animation. It's got wonderful acting, wonderful voice acting, and it all none of that works against each other. It all works together. And I love that it has a literal cartoon villain. I think that's just awesome. And you know, it doesn't take itself too seriously, but it takes itself seriously enough so that you get very caught up in what actually turns out to be a complex and layered story with beautiful characterization. And I also highly recommend going and looking at all the backstage stuff, because it is fascinating how this movie came to be. And please, everyone, go out and watch it if you haven't. You will not regret it.
Or if you haven't seen it in a while.
Yes.
Alex?
I think the legacy is that they made a movie in which, as you're watching it, it's very easy to forget that you're watching animated characters, that you are watching a film in which live actors are corresponding to something that's not there. And again, I'll echo what everybody else is saying. Watch the bonus features, which includes how they were able to do things like Roger spitting water out or the weasel splashing water at people. Yeah. The interaction between the live objects and the inanimate animated characters is truly something to behold. And really, nowadays, cost-effective wise, would be impossible to do.
Yeah. Mike?
Oh, it's... For this movie, it's, for me, it's an age of innocence ending. The age of innocence of Los Angeles at the time, because this is pre-freeway and highways and such.
Oh yeah, that's even a plot point.
Oh, I know, and that's the that's the wonderful thing about it. You still had all the streetcars, and you had, you know, the kids and Eddie riding, you know, hitching a ride on the streetcars on, because he didn't have cash on him, and you had, you know, everyone who was coming back from World War II, you know, all the veterans and the people, you know, all that. It was just, you know, the newsreels at the movie theaters. It was just, it captured so well the big studios and the feel and the look, and that the animation studios were just as big as Warner Brothers or Paramount and all the big, you know, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up, you know, that type of thing. And it was just awesome. And they captured it that, you know, you had the cartoon characters walking around the studios on sets and such. And it was just, it was so awesome. This movie, you know, I was so happy when I showed it to William the first time. And, you know, he enjoyed it immensely. He's probably seen it at least 30 or 40 times already.
He's on his way to a million.
Yep, exactly. So,
I have to say that, you know, for all the flack that, you know, we give Hollywood, and it's a, you know, it's a true statement, even though it's a cliche, that it's we're lucky that anything great gets made at all. The way that the system works, the way that the studios work, the way that, you know, LA being what it is, the business being what it is, et cetera, you know, sometimes there are happy accidents where movies that, you know, are just sort of low key and people are making them, they don't realize, and all of a sudden they become a big thing. This is a movie from right when, you know, the deal was made and Spielberg picked this up and, you know, Disney purchased the rights, that this was going to be a big deal. This was going to be history making. This was going to be something that people were going to do, or, you know, the people working on this were going to be in charge of something that had never been done before. And you add that to the fact that It's a movie about the love and the power of filmmaking. This is really a love story about like film, you know, film as a legitimate and taking two genres that usually aren't considered, you know, the Oscar winning ones. You know, these are, you know, for kids or, you know, crime dramas or whatever that are just sort of cast aside as not being real art. But that you could tell that everybody making this movie, everyone from the grip to the main producers, really were in love with the concept and really wanted to make this happen. And it was through their will that it did. I sense on this movie when I watch it, every frame is done with love. And that's what I took from it. And I was happily reminded of that the last time I saw it. So that's another reason why I definitely encourage people to see it out there. And of course, if you have your own, if there's something that we missed, which I'm sure there is, we missed a ton of stuff talking about this movie, or there's some angle that you want to that you want to express to us about the 30th anniversary of this classic, please reach out to us and contact us at ESOpodcast.com. That's right? ESOpodcast@gmail.com. And that said, thanks, everyone. We'll be right back with the ESO Network Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about Jurassic World 2 Fallen Kingdom. So, if you've been listening to me for the past few weeks, you know I have raved about wanting to see the new Jurassic World movie. I love dinosaurs, and I was ready to see more of them on the big screen. And I was really, really, really excited, and I really, really, really enjoyed it. I will start off by saying this was not my favorite out of all of the Jurassic Park films. And I will say that I would suggest watching the first one before going to see this one. It's been about a year. Go watch it again and then see this one. But I knew it was going to be cheesy, and I already had an idea of what was going to happen, more or less, from the previews on TV, but I still enjoyed this film. It had dinosaurs, it had a cheesy plot, it had decent acting, and it was funny, so of course I enjoyed this film. Did I mention there were dinosaurs? So many dinosaurs! This movie had some really cool visual effects in it, and some really cheesy ones too. I love the scene with the giant water dinosaur in the ocean with the surfers. Like, that is just such a cool scene, and it's also super terrifying because we don't know what's in the ocean and what's down there in the depths because giant creatures could exist. And that giant creature was in the ocean at the level with us, so it's terrifying to think about that. Also, the scene with the dinosaur getting engulfed by smoke as the ship is leaving the dock of the island while the volcano is going off just breaks my heart. It's so sad to see. And there were a few other notable ones that I still also really love, but those were the two that really, really stuck with me. Jeff Goldblum, while having a really small role in this film, was still awesome, and it seemed to really, really fit with his character from the older Jurassic Park movies. So I really, really love how they fit him in as an homage to the older films from 25 years ago, while not making it totally in your face and keeping it with the storyline of the last one. Is it a great work of cinema? No. Is it a fun action-packed movie with dinosaurs? Yes, and that is exactly what I thought it would be, and I am super happy about that. Out of the other films, this probably ranks 3 or 4 on my list. I can't really decide where to place Jurassic World 1 and Jurassic World 2, since I really liked both films, and I don't really know which one I liked better, so it's kind of like in the middle. And if you want to know my ranking, it's Jurassic Park, Jurassic Park 3, Jurassic World 1 and 2, kind of there, and then Jurassic Park 2. So, yeah. Thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Redemption songs. All I ever had. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Network Con Report. Con!
Well, everybody, we have just survived, as we mentioned at the top of the show, The first ever Atlanta Comic Con, at least the first one ever that was put on by the good folks that put on the Indiana Comic Con and the Tampa Comic Con. And I think they're also going to do one, I think it's in Detroit and in San Francisco this later this year. So they are spreading out, and this is their first venture into Atlanta. And this was held at the Georgia World Congress Center. Mike and I were invited to participate as part of media. So we helped cover the event as well as participate in panels. We had a panel on podcasting on Saturday, and then we had two panels on Sunday, one on Doctor Who and one on podcasting again. That's how we finished up the show. So as we mentioned at the, again, in the top of the show. So, but overall, you know, I'm always hopeful, but leery of shows, comic shows coming to Atlanta. I mean, I've been here long enough that I've always wanted to support a great comic show, a comic-centric show in the Atlanta area. But for whatever reason, and believe me, a lot of people have been speculating as to why, for some reason Atlanta just can't put it together, at least not a string of shows multiple years in a row and to have something stick. So, but this company has tried to do that. They have come to the World Congress Center. They had plenty of advertising. And when I walked into the place and Saturday, after I was a little bit, after I had to catch my breath because it was such a long walk, building C is not an easy trot. But I was pleasantly surprised by the number of people that were there, and they're people that I don't usually see at conventions. So I thought the atmosphere was great. The setup was fantastic. They had the artist right in the center of the whole, like the whole floor. So they were treated like, you know, not like royalty, but they were treated like front and center. They weren't just shoved in the back somewhere. They did have guests, of course, celebrity guests, which, you know, is understandable and actually great. I mean, there was a lot of people there that were excited to see Leah Thompson, Sean Astin, Nichelle Nichols was there, a lot of other big names. I, of course, was very excited to meet Renee O'Connor from Xena. She played Gabrielle, and I'm a big Xena fan. And I unfortunately don't think that show is like, you know, I think people need to be reminded on how good that show was, because her line was not very long. She was pretty accessible, but she was very nice. And I spent some time talking to her, and it was a great time. But the vibe of the floor was good. I talked to a lot of the indie creators. They seemed to be doing pretty well. They were pretty hopeful for good things. Some of them did better than others, of course. It is, you know, just like a normal show. But they all said that the vibe was good. They were treated well, and that the traffic was there. There were plenty of people there, so they couldn't complain about that. And that was what you want from a con, especially a first year. Now, Mike, I know this was you were there a little bit earlier than I was on Saturday, but overall, what was your experience of the con itself with the floor and everything?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was neat to see Atlanta have a true big comic show and a great turnout. It was, you know, it was neat to see, you know, a panels full of people. It was great to see cosplayers. It was great to see, you know, the artists taking front and center. I loved how they did it with the vendors surrounding artists, almost like complimenting them in a lot of ways. And then off to the side against the far wall were the celebrities for the Walk of Fame. And, you know, where people were set up and everything. It was great. You know, I got to meet Billy West. I got to meet a couple other people. I got to meet Sean Astin. And, you know, it was just like, it was just really neat to get to meet some of these celebrities and just say, hey, you know, because I'm not an autograph person or a picture person. I just like meeting these people and, you know, talking to them, picking their minds. It's pretty neat to do. And I just had a blast with that. And, you know, Sunday wasn't as crowded as Saturday, but I think the enthusiasm was still there, and the amount of people, you know, who showed up, and, you know, we got to enjoy talking to them at our panels, because we did two podcasting panels and we also did a Doctor Who panel, and it was just a lot of fun. It was great hanging out with you.
Oh, absolutely. That was a blast. It's always fun to do like, you know, tag team for those panels and just walk the floor, you know, and see everybody. very, very interesting that, I mean, I think both of us had conversations with people who had never been to a con before or were not like your usual quote unquote geeky con goer. And they were just in love with it. There was some misunderstanding with the fact that it's called Comic-Con, that it's somehow related to the big one in San Diego or New York. And that's understandable with the name. You know, if you're not in the know, obviously. And of course, the promoters want you to think that. They want people to think that they're all like one big con event that happens like that tours around the country. So they're willing to, you know, perpetuate that myth. But by and large, I do think that most people like the fact that it's relatively easy to get to. On Sunday, of course, there was a bit of trouble with, you know, with the United game going on at the building next door. And that got like, you know, whatever it was, 60,000 people or however many people they can stuff into that place. So there was that contention. But, you know, the aisles were wide, so you could get around. I think one family that we talked to said that they really appreciated the fact that you could take the family here, and not because of anything lewd or anything else, like, you know, but because just you could move around as a family. Like, you could actually move a baby carriage around. You could move toddlers around without having to worry about them getting lost or trampled on or whatever, you know. So, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for that. And I do, you know, hope the show does, comes back. I hope it, you know, I know that there's some issues with, you know, other big shows here in the Atlanta area. And so there's going to be that sort of, you know, coordination of how this is all going to work. But, from everything I've seen of the show, from everything I've heard from people who've worked with these promoters, their heart is in the right place. They want to just help promote comics. You could tell that even though they had celebrity guests there, they did respect the comic medium, and they were, I mean, there's, you know, whether you were looking for back issues or looking for a young independent artist to try to help support and find something new, they have a lot of options.
Oh, very much so. And that was neat to do and see that, you know, for whatever your interests were, there was stuff there for you.
Yeah. And I have to say also, maybe just to wrap up, but the cosplay was so on point. Like, I mean, so many good costumes. Of course, I took a ton of photos. And for everyone I took, I probably missed about 10 other people that I would have liked to get their picture, because they were just, I saw some amazing costumes. And I know that sometimes some people believe that comics and cosplay don't go together. I am not one of those people. I think there's room for both. There was plenty of room for both in the Georgia World Congress Center for all the folks there. And it's just people having a good time and geeking out, you know. And if geeking out means going to read comics, that's one thing. If geeking out means dressing up like the Joker and Harley and hanging out with your friends, that's another. I mean, it's all. And I think there's room for all of that. And the way that it was celebrated here at this convention, I have to applaud them, because it just seemed like it was a great vibe. And yeah, all those people, if you, you know, thank you for doing the work and dressing up and allowing me to take your picture, of course. And of course, if you want to see the pictures that I took, just go to my Instagram or my Facebook, and feel free to comment or tag yourself, or if you know who that person is, because I always love to give people credit when I post pictures of them, because I think they do an amazing job. Otherwise, I wouldn't want to get your picture. So if I take your picture, it's because you've done something amazing. Also, one final shout out to the people who came to our panels. We didn't know what to expect. This is a first year convention. You know, it's a comic convention. We're doing panels on podcasting. We didn't know if anybody was going to show up. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, certainly the last one we did had a lot of significance for us. But you know, I think that I think we were pleasantly surprised by all the crowds that came, all the audience members that came to all of our panels.
Oh, very much so. It was pretty amazing. You know, we had very good turnouts for our panels, and especially for our first year show. And the people who brought up conversations, people who, you know, were just talking to us after, and, you know, it was just great. And we met some very special people.
And they had, you know, ours were not the only panels. I was kind of impressed by the amount of fan panels that they were doing for, you know, a show like this. You wouldn't expect they would, you know, maybe they do Q&As with the guests, which is understandable, but to have fan panels, yeah, that's not usually done. So at a show like this, so I give a hat off to them for doing that and for letting us participate in it. That was a really great, great time.
Exactly. And that's the cool thing about it. You have so much, you know, cool stuff going on. You had 3 full days of panels. That's not too bad for a first year con.
No. And I'm sure that there were plenty, like every time we went by the rooms, they were, I wouldn't say they were packed, but there were people there. I mean, it was definitely worthy of doing panels. There were a lot of people there. So I know that our good friend, the award-winning Bobby Nash, when he did his panel, he said he had a pretty good crowd as well. So yeah, it was a good time. Good time. So thanks, Atlanta Comic Con, for the invite. We enjoyed our weekend. So good luck to you guys as you go further with your Comic Cons. And we hope you come back to Atlanta. We're going to rest up for a bit. Mike and I are not scheduled to do any more shows or appearances for, I think, the entire rest of July and into August. But one person who is doing a show in August is Angela Pritchett. Geek Girl herself will be at the Potterverse convention in Rockville, Maryland. That is, of course, celebrating all things Harry Potter. So check that out if you are a Potterhead. Is that what they call them? Potterheads? Potter fans? No, that's probably not right, right? Because that's such a Muggle thing to say, right?
Well, of course. How about wizards in training?
Yeah, exactly. And then we are, like I said, we're resting up, we're preparing, because the big man, the big show, the big dragon is coming August 31st through September 3rd. It is our big show of the year, especially from an Earth Station One podcasting standpoint and an ESO network standpoint. Mike and I will be all over the place. Mike will be doing panels. I'll be in the comics track at my table, but I'll be doing panels as well. We'll be running around. All sorts of ESO network folks will be there as well, including, for the first time ever, Ashley Pauls will be there. So we are very excited to introduce Ashley to the world of Dragon Con. Her world will never be the same again.
Oh, no. No. She'll be Miss Experience now.
And Mary Ogle, who you've heard on this podcast, and also you can hear every other week on Earth Station Who, she will be in attendance. Kevin Eldridge from the Flopcast, Geek Girl Angela Pritchett will be there. Jason and Rita both coming off their great premiere of the Seekers of the Lost World movie. They will be in attendance as well. The Nerd Bliss folks will be there. Christina, Eric, and Dan. Geekly Oddcast, Thomas from that podcast will be there. And, of course, Joe and Brad from the Cigar Nerds will be in attendance as well. And there's going to be many, many more folks from not only from ESO Network shows, but friends of the station are going to be all over the place as well. Actually, if you're going to be at Dragon Con, dare I say, you are automatically considered a friend of the station. Is that fair, Mike?
Of course. You know, 90,000 people are friends of the station now.
And we are very excited. The next episode of the Dragon Con Report is going to be done in a couple weeks. And very excited. We're going to try something new and different on that one. So you want to tune in on that if you are a fan of Dragon Con and you plan on coming. It's going to be a great time. We have a blast at Dragon Con. And it's our home field show. I am looking forward to that. And otherwise, who knows what's going to happen after that? Well, you'll have to see if we can recover from Dragon Con. But if you have a show that's coming up either, you know, in late July, August, or certainly after August 31st, please reach out to us. We want to help promote it. We want to hear you rave about it. So reach out to us, contact us, because we love talking about conventions.
Hot off the presses, Mike. Something new. Oh, right now. All right. Right now.
Look at that. Listen. I can hear the presses.
Right now, I can tell you that as of this recording, the new ESO Network presents the Dragon Con Hotel Walk video 2018 is now live.
Woohoo! That is big news.
Yes, we are very happy. Darren and I went back and we actually walked all around Dragon Con and pointed out all the new updates and everything for newbies and everything for veterans alike. And we walk all the way through the hotels and we walk all the way down into America's Mart and over through Petrie Center and, you know, just give little pointers and hints and such. And, you know, it just helps out. And you could actually see, you know, so all the construction that's going on down there because they're renovating the Sheraton. They're renovating over at Petrie Center. It's just, it's amazing what they're doing. And we talk all about it. And, you know, join us for it. You can find it up on YouTube under ESO Network. You could also find it up on Facebook under our Facebook groups and, you know, the various ones. It'll be up there, probably be on the Dragon Con page. So hopefully, you know, take a peek. Let us know what you think of it. I think it's pretty awesome. All right, with that, now we can say we'll be back in a moment. So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Jason, you made it through your first episode with us, man.
Yes, I hope to be back again.
Oh, most definitely. You are a wealth of information about Roger Rabbit. Anything you want to shout out about?
Yes. So next month, I'm going to be giving everyone a preview of season two because it's been a while. And again, I'm not going to go into the personal stuff, but because of Ant-Man and the Wasp doing well at the box office, and Disney was known for, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, I thought it would be nice to discuss the very first miniature movie I ever saw, Bird Eye Gordon's Attack of the Puppet People. And then in September, there will be a few episodes between September and December, ending with the Doomsday Clock. Speaking of crossovers, that will be discussing the Watchmen meeting the Justice League. It's not a bad story, so that'll pretty much tie people over. And also, speaking of crossovers, I'll be discussing the DC superhero and Looney Tune comics that came out last year and the ones that are coming out this year. It was Bugs Bunny and Superman and Tasmanian Devil and Wonder Woman, Martian Manhunter, and Marvin the Martian, Foghorn Leghorn, and Jonah Hex. This year, it's supposed to be Sylvester and Tweety meet Catwoman, Harley Quinn meet Gossamer, and Daffy Duck meets Joker. So, you know, we had Batman meet Elmer Fudd last year, so I'll be discussing those. And if any requests, just send them at hunnickfeedback@gmail.com, or you can find me over at Twitter at hunnickqueen.
That is awesome, man. And definitely look at it. And, you know, when you start up again, why don't you come on the show again to promote?
Yes.
We definitely would love to have you, man.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah, the geek seat awaits.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The geek seat hungers. That is awesome, though. Thank you, Jason. And, of course, the lovely Mary Ogle.
Ah, thank you for having me. I love talking about one of my favorite movies. And if anyone is interested in my artwork, they can find me at maryogle.com or on Etsy at eVision Arts.
And where else can they find you?
Where else can they find me?
Yes.
In my cell, back in when I'm forced to do Earth Station Who.
Exactly. Whew. I thought she had forgotten about that blue light bulb that training we have her on.
I will never, ever forget.
Yes. And we do have a lot of talk about with Doctor Who coming up. Especially,
we do have a lot to talk about with Doctor Who.
So we'll be doing that all later this week, actually. Earth Station Who will be coming to you, and we're going to be talking about more River Song and the 11th Doctor with Let's Kill Hitler. It's going to be a great one to talk about, actually.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I love River. I'll talk about her anytime.
Exactly. And of course, you can find Earth Station Who up on the ESW feed on the Earth Station One, not Earth Station One, the ESO Network website. So definitely check that out, or up on iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else you can find fine podcasts. Of course, Alex, thank you so much, my friend.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. And Mary, at least you get let out for all the Earth Station New stuff. Whoa. I only get to re-release
hold,
movies.
Hold on. So, hold on. Guys, record that over. Someone sounded like someone dropped something or something.
Yeah. My microphone fell over.
No. Okay. let's do Alex. Let's do your segment part.
That's fine.
Okay. And Alex, thank you so much for joining us, my friend.
Mike, it's always a pleasure getting the chance to talk, and especially on an opportunity to talk about a great classic film like this one. It's been a real honor.
And it's nice, you know, you don't have to go looking up those how much it made this week.
Yeah. Although I will point out, it was the number two movie of 1988.
Oh, really? Behind what?
Rain Man.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's fair.
And it was, and right behind it was Coming to America. So it was a very strange batch of films that year.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember that. Yeah.
What? No superhero movies? Jeez.
Well, Die Hard, but you know, it's not a Christmas film, apparently.
Yeah. Thanks, Bruce Willis.
Yeah, it is. Anyway.
It was written by Shane Black, really?
Might as well have been.
So anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I'm, you know, there's, as much as I love movies, I also really, really love movie trivia. And Collider Video just released two very long YouTube clips called their Collider Collision. They do a thing called the Trivia Schmodown, pairing some great names in both the film industry and the reporting industry, and pair them off against each other for really, really awesome movie trivia. And if you haven't seen one of their shows, I seriously suggest that you check out the Collider Collision parts one and two. It is some of the best, some of the hardest movie trivia you've ever heard.
Oh, very much so. That's pretty darn awesome.
Yeah. Challenge accepted.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm ready for it, man. I am so ready. All right, Mr. Mike, you did another one, my friend.
Yeah, we did, especially on such short notice.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Thanks, Lucas.
Yeah, well, you know, that just goes to show that there's nothing that we won't talk about. No, we have several different subjects. We're always able to switch it up and come up with a topic. And this one was a great one, even though it was unexpected. So, of course, it was my pleasure.
Oh, anything you want to shout out about, my friend?
I do. I have some good news and some bad news for people who are planning to see me at Dragon Con. The bad news, we'll start with the bad news first. As much as I would love to make it happen, Tiki Zombie 4 is not going to be ready in time for Dragon Con. But fear not, because I am working on I have a backup plan in place, and there will be something for Tiki Zombie fans who come by the table at Dragon Con this year. And the good news, the really, 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 really good news is that the Earth Station 1 Presents Tales of the Station Volume 3 will be at the table at Dragon Con this year. We've got some contributions from some great folks. It's just amazing. We're putting together the book right now. It's set to go to the printer at the end of the month, and it's going to be fantastic. We're getting better and better as we go along, and I'll have more details on who's involved and how you can get a copy, even if you're not going to be at Dragon Con, in the weeks to come. But I just wanted to officially announce that Volume 3 is happening and will be available at Dragon Con.
I guess I better start working then on it.
Well, the good thing is that you have to do very little. It's sort of like on this show, you just do the intros.
Exactly. And I am still considered the host. How about
exactly.
that?
And the, exactly. And well, you are the director.
And the producer and the director and the guy who edits half the people out of the show. It's pretty darn awesome, actually.
Absolutely.
It is pretty cool. All right. My shout out real quick just goes to the fine folks at the Atlanta United game that we got to ride the subways down to. And
we spent a lot of time with the fans.
Oh, we sure as heck did. William kept on wanting to sing the OA OA game song and everything.
Of course.
And Michael Faulkner was like, damn it, I forgot my vuvuzela, whatever it's called. The horn that, you know, kind of like a didgeridoo right. type thing. And it's like, yeah, no, I think it's okay. So it's pretty darn awesome. But folks, if you haven't had a chance yet, because during the World Cup halftime, if you were in England and now everywhere in the U.S., Doctor Who has its first official mini trailer, a teaser trailer, you could say.
Yes. Teaser, don't call it a trailer.
Yeah, it's a teaser. And it makes you really want to have pizza, you know? It really, really does. But it was great to see the new companions. and kind of hinting at what we're going to get this season. And it's nice to actually see a smiling doctor. So after Dr. Angry Eyebrows, it's pretty cool. So it's definitely worth checking out. So you can find it up on YouTube. You can find it up on the Earth Station Who Facebook group. You know, anywhere probably you think of Doctor Who stuff, you probably could find it.
And we will be by dissecting it frame by frame on the next episode of ESW.
Kind of almost like what we could have done with Roger Rabbit tonight. You know, going for, hey, wait, there's that character. Wait, there's that character. God, we might have to do another Roger Rabbit episode doing that. Wow, that could actually be kind of fun. But join us
on podcast, sir.
Oh yeah, exactly. The Who Framed ESO podcast. That could actually work. Ooh. No, can't do new podcasts. No, down boy, no, down no, boy. I know. I don't want another dog. Nope. Join us here again next week when we are going to be going to look at a TV show. That's right. We are going to be doing mixing wrestling and TV together. No, we're not talking about the WWE. They do that over on the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. We are going to be looking at GLOW, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. The two seasons are done. They're out there on Netflix, and you can actually check it out before we review it. And we're going to be talking all about, you know, Zoya the Destroyer, and of course, Liberty Bell, and all the other characters. And, you know, it's pretty darn awesome to see. I was a little hesitant about watching it, but man, was I really happy about it. So we're going to be talking all about GLOW. So, you know, if you want to join us for that, we definitely want to hear from you. We're always looking for more people to sit in with us. If you want to ever sit in with us, please, you can join us by writing us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com, or you could call us at 404-963-9057. If you enjoy the show, please, you know, spread the love, you know, subscribe to us. You know, all you have to do, hit subscribe. And if you like it, rate us, you know, that's how more people find us. Pretty easy. We're up on iTunes. We're up on Stitcher Radio. I think we're up on iHeartRadio. We're up on, you know, Google Plus. You know, we're on wherever you can find good podcasts and not so good podcasts. We're up there. We're everywhere. We're trying to get Earth Station One as much places as you can. And you know what? It's awesome. We really appreciate you guys, you know, supporting us. And, you know, this has all been great. So join us here next week and we will see you then. My name is Mike Faber. We'll talk to you later. Peace. And we're done.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the T Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.